the bubble.
Hello and welcome to Burst the Bubble. You're listening to Chem FM with me, Chris Moten.
Me, Michael Quintario.
And me, John Nelson.
This is a show about silly news.
Way to start it, Chris.
Yeah, I know. Well, I think, to be honest, the way to start it compliment today goes to our marvellous computing facilities, which are appropriately making the Burst the Bubble theme sound like it's coming from underwater. Of course, I just became the station's computing officer, so that just became my fault. So I'll be figuring that one out later in the week. My week plan aside, yes, this is a show all about silly news. It's a sort of a news quiz for the light-hearted, possibly the faint-hearted, for people with some sort of heart-related oddity, except for actual ones, which are very serious, and we won't be discussing on the show. What we will be discussing on this show begins with a section on lessons. First and foremost, a story about Scottish teenagers who are being taught how to sleep.
This is in schools as well, I see, being taught to sleep in schools.
Yes.
Which, to be honest, I didn't think needed teaching.
Well, they're not being taught to do, like, as in how to sleep. You've got to bracket this very carefully. They're not being taught, open parenthesis, how to sleep in schools, close parenthesis. They're being taught, open parenthesis, how to sleep, close parenthesis, in schools.
Entirely sure I see the difference.
Damn it all.
It's one of those things where that's not entirely making it better. It's just like, because they're going to try and apply their knowledge in the setting in which it is taught. So if they're being taught in schools, they're going to apply the sleeping skills in schools. I mean, when there were many skills I learnt at school which I have not used out of a school-based context.
Trigonometry. Nobody uses trigonometry outside of a school-based context.
Well, that's actually a bad example because I have in physics.
Have you?
But yes, but
no, that's just a bigger, more expensive school.
Yes, it's true. if we're extending school so that it's university as well, then.
Yeah, basically,
I haven't.
You need to have used trig to do actual real things. If you'd built a bridge, you know, we'd give you that,
provided it wasn't being built in the engineering department.
Why?
Because that's still a part inside a school. If we're dividing universities to be schools,
yes. Who's being built in the engineering department and probably being built out of beer mats to try and see how far they could get it.
Do the engineers do that?
That was generally my impression of what engineers were doing in their I would say in their free time, but I suppose in their work time as well.
Huh. Well, it sounds like an interesting puzzle, and it would be quite useful if we were ever to become marooned in a pub. I'd like to know that there's somebody out there who knows how to get me out of that.
Marooned in a pub, literally, like, it's flooded.
Right, yeah, exactly. The pub was built on a very tall mountain, and everything else is flooded, and we need to get out of there. Of course, if everywhere else is flooded, a bridge will do you no good, because you can put one end of it on the the island and pub, but where's the other end going to go? You know, all you could ever do would be to build it all the way around the earth, and then back to the same island again.
There was a pork pie shop, maybe, on another mountain that you could get to.
Built at an equal height by contingency planners who thought, if they're stuck in the pub, they'll need a pork pie. If they're stuck in the pork pie shop, they'll need a pint. Vital services were built on a plane.
You do realise that beer mats aren't exactly the most, you know, they're not very strong. If you actually try and walk on them, you can maybe build one that would reach there, but as soon as you try and step foot on it, boom.
So you're saying that rather than building a bridge from beer mats, I should build a bigger, longer beer mat?
Yes,
like they individually, like within themselves, they're
a lot
stronger.
Maybe you shouldn't just get marooned on mountain pub.
Yeah.
The life was all to live by, I think. Don't get marooned in a mountain pub.
Yeah.
The thing I like about this story is there's a charity involved, Sleep Scotland, which just the existence of that is kind of like, yeah. Well, we're in Scotland. What should we do? Let's sleep.
Okay.
But they said watching TV and using computers and mobile phones at night can prevent teenagers getting the 9 hours of sleep they need.
I hate that statement, because what they've said there, they've said that using a mobile phone prevents you from sleeping.
Yes, I know.
Yes, we're aware that you need to be awake to use a mobile phone. If there is anybody out there who has developed the skills necessary to use a phone or a computer whilst sleeping, then good work.
There must be people who sleep tech, surely, because if you hear about sleepwalking, there's a huge range of things that people have done while sleepwalking. I'm pretty sure I've heard stories of people going down to the kitchen and making themselves food while still asleep. So compared to that, getting your phone out of your pocket and texting LOL isn't exactly going to require quite as high brain functioning.
That's so true, yeah.
Yeah, you don't even need to be walking to do the sleep texting. You can literally just reach over in your sleep, sort of grasp something you know, which you might not know what it is, and in your dream just be texting something.
And, but you'd probably text the contents of your brain.
Oh, that'd be awesome, actually. You could, like, delve into your subconsciousness by finding out what text you send overnight. it could be quite worrying if you're, like, sending threatening texts. And you're like, oh dear, I'm in fact a violent psychopath.
It's a poor quality dream machine, really, isn't it? Instead of recording the dream for you, it just
you get a summary in text form.
Which you have to decipher from the predictive text that you previously had.
Oh, yeah. Imagine if the phone that you had in the dream and the phone in real life just had completely different predictive texts.
Okay. That would be a nightmare.
It could have more features. Like, in your dream, you'd be, like, browsing the internet, sending an email, say. And then you'd wake up and go, my phone can't do email. What have I done? You just phoned somebody and went, email. Maybe phone the speaking clock. Email.
But I'm just thinking of that. There are a large list of things that can prevent teenagers getting 9 hours of sleep a night.
Yep. Chief amongst them, the desire to be awake.
Yes.
Essentially, what they should have said is, stop being awake, you idiots. I mean, it's a fair enough message that you should be sleeping for longer. But yeah, how are you going to do it? But okay, so what bothers me, I think, the most out of everything in this story, of which there are many, the thing which bothers me the most is this paragraph here, which I say, listeners at home, if you could imagine that I'm standing in front of a whiteboard and gesturing at a paragraph. Now, this paragraph here, which says that the teaching pack created by the charity Sleep Scotland is to be used as part of the curriculum for excellence. Sleeping as part of the curriculum for excellence
did me a lot of good.
This, if anything, this is the curriculum for adequacy. This is the curriculum for, like, the least possible standard in order to stay alive, along with the lesson about how to raise a burger to your face and then close your jaws
and breathing.
I don't know. I thought perhaps it's all about higher quality sleep.
Quality street.
Excellent. Yeah. Higher quality sleep. Obviously, who needs phone texting to see what's in my subconscious? Obviously, it's chocolate. Higher quality street. I mean, I've said it again. Higher quality sleep. I need some higher quality sleep.
You need some higher quality sleep, and
I've
you spend
some
your
roses
entire sleeping hours going wrong. Caramel keg. Mint triangle.
Okay.
You just like, wake up and go, what have I? I've eaten my phone. Damn.
Well, no, because I think that sometimes I go to sleep, and when I wake up, I think, hey, that wasn't good. I'd only rate that about a 3 or 4 in terms of sleep.
No, it was mediocre sleeping.
It was mediocre. So.
Slipshod sleeping.
No, I think it would be more worrying if you had somebody behind you whilst you were sleeping there with a clipboard. And then sort of wake up in the morning and say, I'm afraid that was only a 5. Back to it.
Oh, we did actually have a story ages ago about the siesta competition. Perhaps it's all about training people for that.
Ah, yes.
They can have higher quality
siestas. Scottish sleeping team. Scottish International Sleeping Team.
But if you look at the article, it also says that teenagers apparently require 9 hours sleep, which personally I thought I did as a teenager. I thought I required 12 hours sleep. I kind of still do. But I don't think 9 hours sleep really counts as a siesta, does it? I think that's a full-blown sleep, really, isn't it?
Yes, it's sort of the latest in Spanish sleep innovation is the mega siesta that lasts for 8 hours and takes place every night.
It's all part of a rebranding exercise. It's like, well, actually, it's going to be called a mega siesta for a little while, and then it's going to go back to being called a good night's sleep when people realise that's what everyone recognises it as, and they've not actually managed to get any more people doing it by changing the name.
It's a bit like trying to get, you know, small children to go to bed, and it's like, they won't go to bed, but if you say, the siesta time, then they would.
Mega siesta.
It's like asking them to play the quiet game.
The quiet game.
See how long they can be quiet for.
That's surprising how often that works as well. when you have, I have like 2 nephews, and it's very, Lazy Lions is the best game ever invented. It really is. It'll keep them quiet for ages.
I don't think I've actually seen this game, but I presume it's what it sounds like, that you challenge some children to lie on the ground and not move.
Pretty much, yeah. And close their eyes so they can't see you moving around. So they don't know that they're not competing against you. They think that you're doing the same thing.
They don't know
all the time you're just watching television on mute.
I actually when I remember one of my key childhood memories, and this, the fact that it's a key childhood memory probably says a lot about me, is I remember going to a nursery where they told us all to have a nap, and I once kind of like, while in this period, opened my eyes to see what they, all the people running the nursery were doing, and they were having tea and biscuits. And so they're just like, they weren't actually doing any sort of childcare type things, they were just having tea and biscuits, and I told my parents I didn't want to go there anymore. I demanded to be moved.
As things they could have been doing go, I mean, that's one of the more acceptable ones. I mean, doing childcare is the most preferable, eating tea and biscuits the second most. If you'd woken up to find they were, like, juggling a dwarf, you'd be like, what does this nursery do? When, in what way are they multiplexing the time here, where they juggle dwarfs and care for children?
Especially because it's quite easy to find, like, dwarf-sized people in a nursery, and if you've just told them to have a nap, and then they're juggling one of
the children. We would like to apologise for the terrible mistake today when we caused a dwarf to snooze whilst we juggled the child.
But going back to the story, the report on the charity is saying that teenagers think they can make up for lost time at weekends, and in our own findings, sometimes they stay up later on Friday Saturday nights, sometimes by as much to 4 to 6 hours, virtually the equivalent of flying to New York each weekend.
It should be pointed out that's in terms of time zones that you've moved, rather than, say, distance travelled.
Yeah. Or, like, it's excitement or cost. In fact, it very, very, only very slightly resembles flying to New York each weekend. In fact, we should market that as an alternative to flying to New York. Save the planet by getting people to stay up by several hours on Friday and Saturday nights.
Pretend it's
flying
New York.
Well, isn't there a song with the song like I'm moving to New York because I got problems with my sleep?
I don't know.
I think that might also be in your subconscious.
I'm sure that's an actual song.
I've heard of the phrase moving to New York.
That's not a phrase. That's just something that people do every now and then. They say, I don't like living here. Where would I rather live? New York. And they move to New York.
See, I thought it was a euphemism. Every now and then people say, he's moved to New York. Do you know what I mean?
I'm worried about what...
That means he's entered a dwarf juggling competition.
Oh, no, I thought it was going to be a euphemism for staying up late on Fridays and Saturdays.
What did you do this weekend? I moved to New York.
Yeah, where did you find the dwarfs?
In the nursery, you know, while the children are having nap time. But I know I shouldn't say that.
I'm unsure as to whether dwarfs came onto this at all.
As to whether or why.
I'm not explaining the past 5 minutes of the show to you, because quite frankly, I don't think I can. I think we should move on to the next story.
What you're saying, move on to the next 5 minutes of the show.
We should continue to permit time to travel forwards. But also
all these dials that Chris has in front of him that he purports to try and control the volume and that sort of thing, they're actually time travel devices for controlling when the show is going out. We can make it go out 5 minutes ago, which would be confusing for all concerned, because then we'll hear it in our headphones as 5 minutes ago and think, oh, that's good material.
And then and at some point you'd think, that was terrible material, I won't say that, and then the universe will collapse. So.
Hello and welcome to Versibubble.
I see what you did there. Let's move on.
I wish I could do the jingle music just to do that as well, but all I can do is...
You'll be able to do it better than the computer can today. Well. It'll be entirely unrealistic. To get it right, you're going to need to cram a cushion across your face again.
I'm not falling for that again.
was that when you ate a marshmallow in your dream?
it tasted so good.
You wake up and
but
go,
I couldn't work out where the feathers came from.
and you texted how good your marshmallow was.
Yeah. That relationship didn't last much longer.
Moving swiftly on. We've got more Scottish training. This time the Grampian Police receiving pedal bike training. I love the fact that they have to say pedal bike rather than just bike and have everyone assume that it's a bike rather than a motorbike.
Well, in fairness, if you're sort of... if you read a bit later on in the story, when it starts talking about the fact that the reason they're doing this is so that they know how to use a bike for chases when they're having to do, you know, a high-speed bike chase against a bike thief. It's probably more legitimate to assume normally that this would be on a motorbike rather than on a pedal bike, which is a bit more sort of hot fuzz than James Bond.
So I'd like to know what incident prompted this training to begin.
Hot fuzz.
Hot fuzz was prompted by a whole series of entirely complicated incidents, but no, out. I want to know what caused Grampian Police to decide this training was needed, because I'm picturing the chief of Grampian Police like having a very red-faced conversation in the mayor's office, where he sort of says, at this point, the perpetrator started to make a getaway on a bicycle. Our officer attempted to give pursuit, but however, the officer attempted to mount the bicycle using a sort of a double-footed straddle sort of maneuver, thus breaking both the bicycle and the officer.
But that's quite impressive, managing to break a bike like that by getting on it. They're generally speaking quite sturdy, unless the Grampian Police have just been going for really, really, really cheap contractors
or very fat policemen.
Or, in fact, not bikes at all. They've completely mistaken what a bike is for something else, and that's why they needed the manual in the first place. They've, in fact, been trying to climb on a large lump of cheese and finding that it doesn't go anywhere and it gets a bit squidgy.
Been, like, bumming around the streets on wheelie chairs, going, this really isn't all it's cracked up to.
And just squeaking along.
progressed onto a ferret. Afterwards, the ferret didn't really want to do what it was told, and it was a bit small.
and the manual is brilliant, because it just talks about things in such a... I'm not sure how to describe it. It's one of those ways where, like, you're not explaining what's using it, actual words that people use in regular conversation. You're explaining it in leafletese or something. Unless a person is a regular cyclist before commencing bike patrol duties, I mean, we'd say starting... Who says commencing in that sort of thing? But a conditioning process is inevitable. This is like, what? They're like, hair conditioner?
So clearly what they mean by that is, they mean like getting used to riding a bicycle. But then in the very next paragraph, they describe the two things that you need as being good stamina and a tough ass. And it's brilliant. It says
the tightening of the backside.
Really? Did I imagine the phrase tough ass?
You did. Yeah.
That's BBC what my News. Consist
of. I wake up and go. What have I done?
The retraining of muscles and the toughening of the backside. I retrained my leg muscle to move my arm. That's what retraining. What else is it going to be? It's kind of like, oh, I moved leg, and now I moved leg to cycle a bike. It's not exactly retraining so much as getting it to do the same thing but more.
If I could do that, I would retrain my internal organs. I'd be like, what's a spleen? What does a spleen do? Yeah, exactly right. I'm going to repurpose it as another liver.
Well, you could do that for the appendix. Currently isn't doing anything apart from occasionally blowing up.
Precisely. Extra brain. Extra, like, very small brain extra for, like, emergencies.
That would make
emergencies.
That would make appendicitis even worse, though, because it would be like a small part of your brain blowing up. And suddenly not only do you have the incredible pain, but you also lose some of your memory.
Yeah. And it will also presumably mean that, like, the chemical conditions in my ancillary brain will be dependent on what I've eaten recently. So,
like,
it's
just like... Well, to be fair, that's very similar to in your actual brain.
Yeah, they say you are what you eat.
There's a lot of very careful mechanisms in place that it's not just like sitting in a soup of burger.
Oh, speaking of that burger, the manual adds, a diet which relies heavily on junk food is neither appropriate or healthy.
See, I told you, a very fat policeman has broken a bicycle in half, and now we have this training course.
In other news, I believe that the Pope is in fact Catholic.
This is also in Scotland, though, so it's quite possible that they may have been eating deep-fried Mars bars all the time. I mean, like, Scotland does have the highest obesity rate of any country in the world, I think, compared to...
In the world, really?
Something
there's
like
a lot
that.
Of them.
Well, there's not many Scots compared to, like, say,
there's
Americans.
There's not many Scotlands.
There's not many Scotlands. There's definitely not many Scotlands. There's only one last time I counted. But it's got quite a high obesity rate, I believe.
That is true.
So, yeah. So, you see, they've all been eating deep-fried Mars bars, and they try and get on a bike, and they collapse. And if they don't collapse, then they don't get very far. And this is why they need bike training.
But we can teach them. We can rebuild them.
We can rebuild them.
The bicycles, not the...
Oh, God.
Yeah, we're not going into a, like, sort of RoboCop in Scotland. But no.
RoboScot.
But,
oh, dear.
If you've got any comments, any advice on how to sleep or how to ride a bike, you can email us studio@camfm.co.uk or get in touch via the website. I'm awful today. On the web form on our website, www.camfm.co.uk.
We're going to take a brief musical break, but we'll be back talking about more silly news after this.
Your music, your station.
97.2, your Cam FM.
Hello and welcome back to Burst the Bubble with me, Chris Moten.
Me, Michael Quinterio.
And me, John Nelson.
We're here to talk about silly news, and specifically in this case, about a YouTube viral hit, a song by Rebecca Black named Friday. Rebecca Black is a 13-year-old American child whose parents have indulged her to a certain degree by allowing her to record a pop song. but it appears as though the people who do this are a reasonably serious company from Los Angeles named the Arc Music Factory, who basically take random minions and then sort of essentially take a punt on them possibly becoming, you know, an awesome viral hit like this one. And so they're the sort of they're the venture capitalists of the music world. They take a lot of very speculative, in this case children, get them to sing and then see if the one in a thousand of them becomes a hit, which she has. However, despite her getting 16 million views on YouTube and enough sales to be, I think, number 39 on iTunes, which is, you know, which isn't bad, she's also attracted a lot of hatred from the internet, who described her, amongst other things, as the worst song ever.
They described her as the worst song ever.
She herself is the worst song, yes. But the song is also pretty bad in itself.
We got some sample lyrics. Yesterday was Thursday. Today it is Friday.
Tomorrow it is Saturday.
Got
it. Okay, we're taking a punt on the next bit of the lyrics there. I think this is right.
They're pretty strong on redundancy, these lyrics. So you have got to get down to the bus stop. But what were you doing there? The audience might ask. Got to get my bus. The lyrics answer. So, but no. Okay. So this story.
We so excited. We so excited. And I'm sure that was like little piggies. We oh. All the way home.
See, I thought it was a racist impersonation of a Japanese person. See, if I were to do the impersonation myself, that would be bad. If I accuse somebody else of doing it, that's okay. Anyway, this story has made me entirely furiously angry. because, okay.
You sound entirely furiously angry.
There was some redundancy there as well, I think. I don't know, furiously angry is
I shouldn't have brought that up, should I?
Nope.
Hoist by your own petard.
Put the petard away for a moment. I want to be angry.
All right, petard on hold.
Petard on hold.
It's back in the box.
Petard suspended, ironically enough.
Try not to be hoisted by it this time, because that could have some serious ramifications.
I'm standing well clear, anyway, of the studio wall-mounted petard.
Vent your spleen, by which I mean your alternative liver.
Low five.
Accepted.
All right. Spleen venting commence. Now, this song is undeniably bad. If you listen to it, it's banal. It's dull. It has terrible, meaningless lyrics. It sounds like every other pop song ever released in history. However, people have been calling it the worst song in history, and this isn't true. What it is the most average song in history. If you go now, if you're listening at home, go to the without leaving this page, of course, go to the BBC's Top 40 page, and play a few random songs from there, and see if you can differentiate from Friday. Their level of banality is equal, if not greater. There's that infernal firework song, you know, baby, I'm a firework. It just says that 500 times.
If it sounded like
exactly
you.
As banal. It has nothing in the lyrics. It just says you're a firework. Great. You mean, am I on fire? Am I about to explode?
Shouldn't be sold to under 18s.
I don't know.
Should be kept in a sealed box.
I don't know, and I don't care. And your song
stay 500 meters away when before firing.
But I think we're taking this too literally.
But this
I think the song would be more banal if we'd written it. Actually, I'm starting to come to that conclusion.
Yeah, we follow all health and safety regulations for fireworks.
Just in case, just to not give the kids a bad idea.
In fact, we put the fireworks away and went to a planned firework display. Because that was both safer and also more fun. Well,
so the fireworks thing was very much an ancillary point, guys. Getting in the way of the spleen, yeah.
Don't want to get in the way of the spleen.
The spleen's an ancillary part.
The spleen is about to become an ancillary fist for this purpose. Okay, so this story, after its admittedly low beginnings, became even worse when the girl who wrote the song was invited onto Good Morning America. Now, if you haven't seen Good Morning America, it's sort of GMTV with less TV and more America. This is America's sort of unemployment ovation, the thing that you watch between sort of 9 and 11 in the morning if you've got nothing to do but eat cereal and regret. So they interviewed...
How do you eat regret?
Yeah, you have to put lots of sugar on it.
Well, I think the ancillary fish is about to come my way.
you eat regret warm. Regret is a dish best served warm, but
not tepid. No.
What about milk? Milk that's been left out of the fridge for like half an hour.
It is made of pure regret. Yes, because it's such an avoidable fate for the milk. If only I would have kept it in the fridge.
Excellent. I'm going to do that just because I want to see what regret tastes like, and then I'm never going to do it again.
You show up in Addenbrookes with like terrible regret poisoning.
This is the worst case we've seen. I'm afraid you're going to have to go into the quiet room now. Oh, I don't want to do that. Oh, why did I ever eat that milk? No, be quiet, you.
Go and think about what you've done.
But then you actually that's the immediate response. But then the long term, you have to embark on a program of rebuilding self-esteem.
That sort of rehabilitation for regret.
Yeah, you have to keep on going back into the hospital to get them going. It's okay, it's okay. You've paid for it now. Move on with your life.
You have big meetings. So you stand up and you say, "Yeah, my name's John, and I once had half a pint of raw milk, and I did used to feel awful about it, but now actually I think it was great. I'm going to do it again."
No, too far. You've gone too far. The
cycle of regret.
Too far the other way.
Oh, okay.
Who gave him the drug? Not any specific one. Just the drug for dealing with regret.
The regret. How are the hospital supplies of drug, Michael? We have a massive box of drug. Use it without discrimination.
Okay. Drug. Gets out. Do I want it in tablet form or...?
That would be the worst name for an actual drug, though.
Drug.
Just say, do you want any drug? And people start having documentaries about specific drug abuse rather than the wider drug abuse. And this is going serious, so I'm going to stop.
Yes.
Okay. Right. So back to Good Morning America, if anybody remembers.
Which is not serious.
So Good Morning America interviewed Rebecca Black about having written the song. And they started the interview sort of in the way that you might imagine the level of lightheartedness is akin to GMTV or The One Show or something like that. So they get this girl on and say, "So, yeah, so you've had a number one, well, not a number one hit. You've had a viral hit on YouTube. How does that make you feel?" And she's like, "Oh, well, it's rather nice, isn't it?" And they say, "Now, I bet all your friends have been, very impressed by it." And he's like, "Oh, yes, they have. No, it's been very nice." And she goes, "Right, now, let me read to you some of the comments that have been posted on YouTube." And this grinning anchor woman sits there in front of a 13-year-old child going, "Now then, Davey26X says, I think that the author should be disemboweled. How does that make you feel?" And the girl just sits there going, "Well, it sounds like Davey26X isn't a very nice person." And you can see the anchor go, "Oh, she was supposed to cry. Break out the more heart-rending ones." And she goes, "Right, okay. This author says that you should have been aborted at birth." And again, Rebecca Black goes, "Well, that's very unpleasant. But I think I can deal with it." It's just, oh, curses. She's still not crying.
Interject briefly here. Can I aborted at birth? That's kind of a little late to be aborted.
I make no guarantees that YouTube commenters have any idea how gynecology works.
Or you have any idea how gynecology works, to be frank.
This is also inevitably the case.
Back to the point.
My point is that Good Morning America conducted this demonic interview in which they're just reading these heart-rending statements to a 13-year-old girl, desperately praying for her to sort of break down on air. And she keeps not doing so, and the anchor keeps trying to provoke her harder and harder. And then you cut to... They clearly gave up on trying to make the small girl distraught, and they cut to a scene with her mother, where they're sort of like, "Now this is your child. This person says that your child should die. How does that make you feel?" And it's, "No! Stop! Stop!"
It sounds like that eventually, if you carry this on to the logical conclusion, they're going to end up beating both the child and mother with sticks. Yes.
Good morning, yes. America.
Good morning, America. We're going to be beating some innocents today. Stick around. Oh. So basically what we learn is that the song is bad, but not as bad as some modern pop music, but that Good Morning America is populated by actual devils.
That's a good moral. An immoral moral, if you
will. An immoral, yes.
Immoral.
So I think the spleen has now been like safely discharged.
That's completely...
The spleen internal pressure has been vented.
Excellent.
That's kind of blown the wind out of what I was going to pick up on this, which is that on her record label page, she's got a profile which describes her as a fun-loving 13-year-old. She loves to sing, dance and act, and she is always looking to try something new. In terms of information, that's got to be a pretty low information content. That's the sort of thing that you get at basically any school play. It's identical to every single girl in the school will play, pretty much.
Yeah, that's pretty much true. And given that she's just sort of released a single or whatever it is, it's not really saying much that she likes to sing and dance, because we can see that. That's there already on the video, and you're already watching that, otherwise you're not looking at the profile page.
It's just that we've gone from the song being the most average song ever, which in some way makes it not average in some weird sort of sense. But ignoring that, we've now got she is average.
The blandest possible profile.
This is
giving the blandest possible responses to Good Morning America, which good on her by the sounds of it.
But. Yeah, actually, yeah. Good on you.
I was really impressed that she took this browbeating like on live national television at the age of 13 and took that pretty well. And at some point they asked us, they started trying to goad her into being massively egotistical. And she says, well, yeah, I think I can kind of sing a bit. I mean, they used a lot of technology and stuff. And they're like, oh, damn! she has a healthy sense of self-perspective.
Yeah,
get this kid off the air.
I must admit, I'm warming to her.
Yeah, I think there's a star in the making.
I've not heard the song, but just her reaction to everything else.
So maybe that could be her show. Like, that a series of very, very unpleasant people will come and try to upset her, and she'll just be kind of level-headed about it all.
That doesn't sound like a great show, to be frank.
No.
Would it be like a contest? You'd have like two 13-year-old children.
Remember,
that would be possibly the worst show in history.
Come on, Scotland, get your team ready now. You're going to be winning the sleep competition. Now you can win the
Scotland would be good at it, according to stereotype as well, because Scotland could get their durest citizens to sit through a bear beating and sort of go, oh yeah, probably true. I dare say.
So long as there wasn't any mention of the football, I think. Because they're
never mention the football.
They're basically going, we're going to be playing a game of football. Everyone try and behave. That's effectively what has been happening over the past couple of days. So, yeah, I think they'd win so long as no one realised their secret weakness was the football.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we should move on to the next story.
Yep. Competition and teams and all that sort of thing. We've got a couple of stories on the London Olympics coming up, I believe.
No, we have indeed. Our first story pertains to the Olympic clock, which is a big old clock that has been plonked in, I think, Trafalgar Square. I'm struggling to find the appropriate paragraph right now, but still, somewhere in London, yes,
appropriately.
And it's a big clock that says it is n seconds until the Olympics begin.
More accurately, it has like days and minutes and seconds. It's not just a large number of seconds, which would be rather hard to get information from. It's just a big number, really. Then, isn't it?
That's quite hard, actually. Are they that confident that they're going to be starting the Olympics to the second?
Yes.
Yes, they are. You could vote on the day, you could stand next to the clock with with a radio going, it's reached zero, guys. Press the big firework button. We have the technology.
But make sure you're 500 metres away from the fireworks.
You know how NASA, when they're launching a rocket, they don't say, blast off will be something between one and half two or so. And then
whenever it just happens, you know.
It's like, okay, the countdown has technically reached zero, but has anybody got the matches? I've mislaid them. I need to light the rocket, basically.
Yeah, have you ever actually been to a sporting event that has started dead on time, though? Ever?
Admittedly, I think we are being a bit overconfident comparing the London Olympics team to NASA. There's one sort of a big global, not global, American.
Yeah, global the clue's by in, American. The clue's in the name there, really, isn't it?
Yeah, okay, right. But yeah, sort of one very highly funded, very, very precise. It has to be very precise, because if it's not very precise, then, you know, spaceships crash into Mars and that sort of thing. Yeah. But comparing that to the London Olympics, where...
Which one recently was it where they got the... when some satellite basically ended up in completely wrong place because they've got which unit of measurement they were using wrong. Was that NASA or was... I get the feeling it was the European Space Agency.
It does sound a bit like the European Space Agency. You can imagine that with sort of the various different... If it was a Brit, then it would be miles, and if it was the French, it would be kilometres, and they go, ah, sacre bleu! It was the wrong way around. It was in inches. We thought it was in millimetres.
just don't try French accents anymore.
Noted.
this is a wonderful thing, because this clock failed very quickly after it was started.
Less than a day, I believe.
Yes. I mean, okay. There are many, many clocks. Most of them don't fail.
Well, at least they don't fail within, like, 24 hours, because otherwise...
It should be pointed out, this isn't any old clock. I mean, they haven't just got a big sign and then, like, duct taped a wristwatch to it, and then written on it, like, you know, PS Olympics start at this date and time.
No, but it's a case that clocks, you think, are a technology that we should really have down pat by now. Even if they are counting downwards, there have been many things we have counted down to in the past. We have a clock.
I believe that they're going to try and replace this now with the London sundial. It's like, oh, revert back to form. We can deal with the sundial. We'll just sort of like, every time it goes through a sunny bit, we'll just do a little check mark. And then once the tally mark reaches 500, the Olympics is going to start, right? Yeah. Once the sun reaches this notch mark... Oh, wait, hold on a minute. This is
cool.
Britain.
Yeah,
it's cloudy.
Like, if you stand on this point and watch the dawn, if it falls within this, like, this little bullseye, then the Olympics have begun.
We're going to make an Olympic stone circle now.
Right. Yeah, you could have Indiana
That's
Jones style,
like,
the opening ceremony could be kicked off by, like, you know, the sun falling into exactly the right place onto a magnifying glass, and, like, you know, like burning Sebco's tie or something,
igniting the Olympic flame. Well, actually, no, you can't do that, because the Olympic flame has to be carried between things. But if you could, I don't know. Can we somehow activate something which will tip the Olympic torch into the...
Yeah, into Sebco's tie.
Sebco's tie, yes.
Tip Sebco into the Olympic torch.
And as we watch the much-honoured gentleman plummet to his death, truly the Olympics have underway.
It's like an elaborate real-life version of Mousetrap. You know, the board game.
Co-trap. We have trapped Sebco in the Olympic torch.
Can we get a big boot to swing down? That's in Mousetrap, isn't it? Oh, it's got a diver in it. We can have Tim Daly jumping into a bathtub.
So can we get...
We could actually do that.
Can we get David Dimbleby to commentate on the whole matter?
Or Terry Wogan.
Or Terry Wogan. And now the boot... I can't do Wogan, but... just a very serene announcer going, and we can see now the boot has kicked him squarely in the buttocks, heralding the beginning of this greatest of occasions.
I like that.
Yeah, I think we should definitely do that. You can build it up over time as well, just gradually sort of get people to contribute things, like in Mousetrap you try and contribute things to go into the big machine, and sort of like somebody
from France has arrived with the staircase.
And
just give one part to each of the incoming teams and they have to assemble it.
Yes, or some kind of like a Gucci shoe or something from Italy at the end that will just gently prod Sebco into the fire. But I mean, this sort of leads on quite nicely to the other Olympic story which we have, which is the Olympic boat project, which is now seeking a crew for its maiden voyage. Now, I hadn't really heard anything about the Olympic boat project until I saw this, but apparently this is where people have been donating bits of timber to try and build this boat. And the list of the things that they've included include things like, you know, wooden spoons and this sort of thing. And I'm trying to work out whether they're building the boat, like, by just gluing all these things together and hoping that there's no holes. Because, like, wooden objects generally don't tessellate that well. I'm sure that's not going to work too well. Or whether, like, the wooden spoons will be the oars or something, in which case this could be marvellous. You know, all these people with, like, varying different sizes of wooden objects trying to paddle a boat.
Yeah, do you reckon the different colleges have kind of, like... depending on how well our rowing teams have done, have donated different numbers of spoons and oars to it.
Yes.
Like wooden spoons that they were. Yeah.
Yes. Welcome. Although we burst a bubble, we do occasionally mention things from inside Cambridge, Chris.
Sorry, I just had a massive brain fart there. It was like three different ideas collided in my frontal lobe, and I was just temporarily rendered comatose.
This is why you need an alternative brain, yes. So you can deal with the extra problems.
I'll send that thought down to my spleen.
To the
that
appendix.
Was.
Yeah. Oh, nuts has exploded.
It'd be like the BBC emergency tape. You know, the one that comes on when if the BBC, like if Radio 1 goes off air, there's an emergency tape that just sort of, you know, occasionally goes, "This is BBC Radio 1, and now The Killers," and just repeats that 5-minute loop until somebody comes back.
And then the kids are like, "Yes, we have killed everyone in Radio 1." bad choice there, but, band, I think.
But my ancillary brain would be very much like that. It would sort of go, "Chris is currently experiencing difficulties. For now, here is some filler conversation." And then I go, "That's very interesting. Did I ever tell you about this one time when I bought a fish? It tasted pleasant. That's interesting. Chris is currently experiencing difficulties."
Please hold while we play some light music. If we could get it so you played light music, that would actually be quite impressive.
Yeah, just like pulled out a harmonica and started going.
It became Bob Dylan. Blowing through the. I'm going to do Bob Dylan because I can't do Bob Dylan. Much like I can't do French.
I think one other thing that we've learned today is that we basically can't imitate anything
apart from ourselves, just about.
And the pops from the theme tune.
Yes. I'm not even sure I did that, did I?
I wonder if we can imitate each other. Michael, can you do a convincing John?
No.
I didn't really help there by just sort of waving my hands and hoping that this would give him an idea.
That one, I could.
Doesn't really work on radio.
Yeah.
I could do it, but I'd have to, like, my ancillary brain would have to be your main one.
Yes.
That's like the biggest insult you could give someone. It's like, "My ancillary brain works like your main one."
Be giving you an ancillary fist in a moment.
Oh dear. If you've got any comments on any of the stories, or in fact any of the tenuously related stuff we've been talking about,
any of this stream of consciousness that has been going on for the past half an hour,
if your ancillary brain would like to get in touch with us, you can give us an email, studio@camfm.co.uk, or you can go onto our website, www.camfm.co.uk, and use the ancillary web form there.
We'll be taking a brief musical break to recover, but we'll be back after this.
Your music, your station.
97.2, your Cam FM.
Hello and welcome back to Burst the Bubble with me, Chris Moten, and my guests, Michael Quinterio and John Nelson. My guest, Michael Quinterio, is always here.
Yeah, I've been demoted. I am insulted.
Ha!
I was here before you.
And this is how I choose to tell you. This is a revolution.
I am definitely a guest. I'm in the irregular guest slot, so-called because the irregularity of the slot, as well as the irregularity of the guests.
Yeah. That was Omen by The Prodigy.
It was indeed, and our earlier song was Girls and Boys by Blur, which I should have mentioned previously, but no. This is going to be a very truncated last segment to Burst the Bubble on account of how we got four minutes left. So let's get right on with it. Our first story of the segment concerns a girl who found a screw in some McDonald's Happy Meal. In a Happy Meal. In some chicken nuggets in particular.
I was just assuming that was going to be the toy. They just decided to go a lot more functional with their toys. I mean, a screw?
It's like the adult's Happy Meal, really, isn't it? They can't be doing with this little plastic junk. What we really need is a 2-inch screw.
They've outsourced the production of the Happy Meal to Soviet Russia, where they're like good, productive toys for healthy Russian children.
Either that, or it's like what you occasionally get something useful in a cracker. And they've decided to just do that. Because most cracker things are about as useful as a Happy Meal toy. But occasionally you get something useful, and I'm
if I pulled a cracker and a Happy Meal came out, then I'd be a lot happier.
if you pulled a Happy Meal and a cracker came out, then you'd probably be a bit alarmed.
And if I pulled that cracker and another Happy Meal came out, I'd be like, "Ooh, infinite regress," but also very useful.
Like
anytime
dolls.
I need a cracker or a Happy Meal, I just need to always make sure I keep that item around with me for the rest of my life. Then I'll have infinite food and crackers.
It's probably easier to carry the cracker. You know, you can put that in your coat pocket, whereas carrying a Happy Meal in your coat pocket.
It'd be like a sort of a pokeball for the Happy Meal.
Yes.
You pull a Happy Meal apart, it goes into cracker form, easily storable form. You pull a cracker and it goes into consumable form. Just gotta never eat the Happy Meal. Actually, that could be problematic, yeah.
That does kind of defeat the objective, surely. But could you eat it once you've torn it apart? Mm. You tear it apart, you get the cracker out, and then you use the cracker for the other Happy Meal, and you eat the torn Happy Meal. It's not ideal.
It would do the trick. Okay,
back to the actual story.
Back to the point. So the only thing I really liked about this story, except for obviously the suffering of others, was the fact that the girl's mother said that the company had promised to send the screw to a, quote, food technology laboratory, which I like to think is the place which classifies thing in the Venn diagram built out of food and technology. So in this case, they determine conclusively that a screw is technology, but not food.
And therefore should not have been in the food section.
Things that are both food and technology are quite difficult to come by. An example would be a sundial made out of waffles.
I mean, there's the obvious joke about chips here. That's it. Done. Okay, and but the other thing is, I just love the fact that they're sending us a screw to a food technology lab. It's like, it's a screw. What are they going to do with it? They're going to look at it and go, this is a screw. We've analysed this. Yeah. They're not going to find out how to get there by sending the screw to a lab.
Maybe the lab just happens to be like slightly falling apart. So therefore, they're just saying, we found the
just
problem,
an
guys.
Email around going, what did anybody do with a 2-inch screw?
It's a food screw, specifically for food technology labs. It was found in food. It's perfect.
We've been holding this thing together with like old chicken nuggets for quite some years now. We desperately need screws.
And this one has come from food. Moving on to our next food-related story, and in fact, the last story of the day. A Norwich man was found guilty of possessing a kitchen knife in a public place, which I wasn't aware was necessarily a crime. He told the court was told that he needed it for cutting salami.
So I like this partly because I made some comment last time I was here about the fact that not little happens in Norfolk, and I was looking through the EDP headlines and it's like, oh yes, this is what's happened in Norfolk. Somebody's been found with a kitchen knife in a public place, and this is a disaster. You know, they could be doing anything with it. I mean, they could be trying to stab mutton, just sheep normally, and try and make it into mutton.
Or like they might be buttering some bread. That's a dangerously subversive act.
Indeed, but definitely my favourite bit about this story, I think, is at the end. It says that the kitchen knife in question is going to be confiscated by the police and then destroyed. because that's completely necessary, you know, otherwise it might fall into the wrong hands.
It might become a symbol of resistance.
I'm not sure how they're going to destroy that. I mean, like, the knives are sort of quite metally and that sort of thing. I mean, they're just going to melt it, or are they going to just sort of, like, use Uri Geller?
There is a serious danger of pastrami here, gentlemen.
they're going to melt it, and then they are going to turn it into a commemorative medallion.
Medallion.
Well, coin, possibly.
with like, in the shape of... So it looks like a metal piece of salami, effectively.
Yes.
Give this to the gentleman in question. There you go. There's your salami.
Thus bringing the whole thing full circle.
Indeed.
Okie dokie. On that note, this has been Burst the Bubble. I've been Chris Moten.
I've been Michael Quintario.
And I have not been Michael Quintario. I have been John Nelson.
Have a good week. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time.